Welcome to Health Media Now with award-winning author and host Denise Messenger for a lifetime of health empowerment. Live by being in the pink, meaning P stands for being persistent, I stands for using your intuition, N stands for networking, and K stands for obtaining knowledge. Our guests entertain and share cutting-edge information. They share with you what may have taken years to achieve through experience in their field. Become inspired and motivated. Reach your full potential with fascinating tips and products. Receive a lifetime of benefits from authors, doctors, practitioners, healthcare providers, and learn about exciting new products. You asked for it, and we deliver. Now, here's your host, Denise Messenger.
Welcome, everyone. I'm so glad that you're joining us today, which is November 17th, 2021. We have a really great show today with Dr. Andrew Budson. And we're going to be discussing Alzheimer's and dementia. It's a big subject. There's a lot of it going around these days. And he will definitely enlighten us with his book, Six Steps to Managing Alzheimer's Disease and Dementia. Welcome to our show, Dr. Budson.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
You have quite a distinguished career. I mean, you've been in research, you've been in clinical care to help those with memory disorders. What got you started on this path?
Yeah, so I have always been interested ever since I was like in high school in trying to understand what is the relationship between that lump of gray matter that sits in our skull and our amazing abilities to do things like to talk and reason and remember and have feelings. Like, how does that all work? And then once I got into medical school, you know, listening to individuals with memory problems and their families, you know, really touched my heart. And I knew that this was the right field for me because I could actually do research to try and better understand, you know, how does thinking and memory work normally, and how does it break down in diseases, and use that knowledge to help individuals with memory problems and their families. So that was how I ended up in this field.
Quite noteworthy. Well, let's dig right in. Most people understand what dementia is because it's true. It's typically touching somebody that you know, unfortunately. I, for one, am a power of attorney for a friend who's suffering from mixed dementia. So it's a very interesting disease.
Yeah, and you're right. Almost everyone knows someone who's touched by dementia or Alzheimer's, but not everybody really understands what the difference is between dementia and Alzheimer's, and maybe I could just take a minute and explain that.
I'd so love that.
Dementia is when thinking and memory deteriorate to the point that it interferes with day-to-day function. And it's really a general term and doesn't point to any particular disorder. Now, Alzheimer's is actually one cause or one type of dementia. And, you know, sometimes I see patients in my clinic and they'll say, oh, you know, the doctor told me I had dementia. And I'm like, well, did they tell you what kind of dementia you had? And they said, no, it's just that I had dementia. And, you know, I would argue that, you know, if an individual and their family are told that they have dementia, they're not told what kind. It's sort of like you go to the doctor saying, you know, doctor, my head hurts. And the doctor says, oh, you have a headache. That's the problem. You have a headache. You wouldn't be satisfied with that. You'd be like, Well, doctor, I know I have a headache. That's why I'm here. I want to know what's the cause of the headache.
Sure.
So I do want all of your listeners to know that, you know, dementia is the general category. Alzheimer's is one cause. It's the most common cause. And if you or a loved one has been given a diagnosis of dementia, don't be satisfied with that. Push the doctor and say, well, what kind of dementia? What's causing it?
Okay. So why don't you tell us more in depth on the differences?
Sure. So in Alzheimer's disease, it typically begins when people have difficulty remembering things. And while people who are aging normally can have difficulty remembering things, in Alzheimer's, even when you repeat information, even if you wait a little bit of time for somebody to retrieve it, and even if you give them a hint or a cue, they typically still cannot retrieve it because they sort of rapidly forget the information. And this can lead to a whole bunch of different problems. People can get lost, even going on familiar routes. They tend to lose things and important things like wallets and cell phones and documents and things like that. They may not be able to pay their bills on time. They may have difficulty showing up to doctor's appointments and other appointments at the right day and time. And they often will have a tendency of repeating questions and stories again and again and again and again to a point that really is not normal. So that is what commonly happens in Alzheimer's. And then there's a couple other forms of dementia, causes of dementia, that are also pretty common. One of them is dementia with Lewy bodies, which is similar to Parkinson's disease dementia. And in these individuals, there is often some stiffness and trouble walking, typically looking like Parkinson's disease. Sometimes there's tremor, sometimes there isn't. These individuals often have visual hallucinations of people or animals. And they do something that is a little bit funny in that they act out their dreams while they are sleeping. And this is something that bed partners typically notice more than the individuals themselves. But if they are sleeping by themselves, they may find in the morning that all of their covers are kicked out or they actually fall out of bed. So that's a little bit about some of the common diseases that can cause dementia.
Interesting. So basically, we're basically talking about two, Alzheimer's and dementia. Or is there a different element to another type of dementia?
Right. So there's the Alzheimer's dementia. There's dementia with Lewy bodies, which would be a second type. And a third type would be vascular dementia or dementia due to stroke. And these type of dementias are different, first and foremost, because people often know that they have strokes. Usually they know exactly when the stroke occurred, and so it's not the same type of slow, gradual decline that often occurs in Alzheimer's disease. Instead, it's like, you know, it was, you know, November 17th at 6 p.m., bam, the stroke occurred, and that was when the memory was first hit or the ability to find words was first noticed. And it typically occurs stroke after stroke after stroke after stroke.
Oh, my gosh.
And this is, yeah. And so this is actually step one in the six steps to managing Alzheimer's disease and dementia is to understand dementia. That's step one. Now, if you'd like, I can briefly describe to your listeners the other steps in the book.
Yes, please do.
Yeah. So step two is manage problems. And here we spend a lot of time going through all sorts of different ways that family members and other caregivers can take care of somebody with all sorts of different problems without medication. And we begin with some general approaches. And one that I'd like to share with your listeners now is called the four R's. So if someone is upset, let's say that they're trying to leave the house and they're rattling the door and you say, oh, honey, where are you going? And they say, I'm trying to go home. And, you know, as a caregiver, you're thinking to yourself that they're already home. This is our home. So the first thing we want to do, the first R is reassure. We want to reassure the individual that everything's okay. The second R is reconsider. We want to reconsider things from the individual's point of view, because from their point of view, they may believe that their home is the home that they grew up in, or a home that they were living in, you know, 20, 30 years ago. The third R is redirect, because we want to direct our loved one's attention away from whatever is upsetting them and towards something that is both distracting as well as calming. And speaking of calming, the fourth R is relax. And all of us as caregivers, when we're in this stressful situation, we need to take a deep breath in and relax. Because if we are upset or frustrated or irritated, we can reflect those emotions back to our loved ones. And then after some general approaches, and we have a few other general approaches that we recommend, we then tackle specific problems with memory, and we talk about things like false memories and why do they occur and what to do about them. We talk about language difficulties, and in addition to making sure that, you know, people check the hearing and make sure that's okay and make sure the hearing aids have batteries and things like that, we talk about why does language break down in dementia and what can you do about it. And, of course, you can use pictures. You can pay attention to your body language and the tone of your voice and facial expressions, even when people no longer can comprehend language. We talk about vision problems, including hallucinations, and how you can deal with them. We talk about emotional issues like depression and anxiety. And then we have a long chapter on behavioral problems, including agitation and sundowning, and how sometimes, take something like sundowning, you know, we have to modify our behavior to help our loved ones. And what I mean by that is, let's say you really want to have your loved one there and present for your Thanksgiving dinner, and you typically have your Thanksgiving dinner, let's say, at 5 o'clock. Now, you know, because your loved one has sundowning, that they're not going to be very good at 5 o'clock. They probably will be a little bit confused or a little bit irritable. Maybe that's time to get agitated. So we can't cure sundowning, but we can move Thanksgiving to make it at noon instead of at 5. And that way, it can be at a time when your loved one may be at their best. Speaking of being at your best, no one can be at their best if they don't have a good night's sleep. And we have a whole chapter on sleep to help people be able to go to bed on time, to sleep through the night, to get up at a normal time, and be at their best during the day. And then we have a whole chapter on bodily functions, including things like walking and climbing stairs and tremors and incontinence and ways to manage all these different things. Now, step 3 of our 6 steps is ask about medication. And in this step, we begin by talking about all the medicines that can cause problems with thinking and memory. And what we mean here are medication classes like sleep medicines, cold and flu medicines, allergy medications, anxiety medications, narcotic pain medications, muscle relaxants, some of the incontinence medication. Not every medicine in these classes, but many of them can cause problems and can actually make your loved one function worse. And
then,
of course, yeah, exactly. Oh, dear is right. And then, of course, we spend time talking about, you know, what are the good medicines? What are the medicines that can really help to improve thinking and memory and mood and behavior? We talk about all those medicines, too. Step 4 is build your care team. And we begin by talking about the most important member of the care team, which is you, if you are the primary caregiver. And my co-author, Dr. Maureen O'Connor, who wrote this section, she has a wonderful metaphor. She says, you can't pour from an empty cup. And so she talks about how we all have to fill our cup up as caregivers. We have to be able to make sure we take good care of our own health. We need to eat right, to exercise, to continue our social connections with our friends, to continue working or pursuing our hobbies if we're doing those types of activities, because we can't be a good caregiver if we're not caring for ourselves and filling our own cup.
And
then
really
we talk about, and then we talk about what are the ways, concrete steps that you can enlist friends and neighbors and family members, even if they live in another part of the country. You know, maybe they can do some internet research for you. Maybe they can set up some online bills for you. Maybe a neighbor could pick up a few things from the supermarket or the corner store when they're going to those places anyways. Maybe an old friend could just come and sit with your loved one for an hour once a month. We talk about how do you get that momentum going so you're not trying to do it all by yourself, because no one individual can care for a patient with dementia all by themselves. Step 5 is Step 5 is sustain your relationship. And here we talk about, you know, what are the ways that even though your loved one has dementia, what are the ways that you can continue having a positive, meaningful, loving relationship? So, for example, you know, maybe your loved one can't go to dinner and a movie out in the way that you used to enjoy doing it as a couple. But maybe you can get some takeout, sit on the couch, watch an old movie, and still spend some meaningful time together. Then finally, step 6 is plan for the future. And in this step, we talk about all sorts of things that are good to know sort of ahead of time. How do you protect your loved one from like scams and telemarketers? How do you set up power of attorney and healthcare proxy? And also, how do you know, when is it time to get assistance either in the home or have your loved one consider going to the day program? How do you know when you might want to consider a continuing care retirement community or assisted living or a nursing home? And we talk in detail, how do you make that type of transition so it's not a painful experience or so it's at least as pain-free as possible. We also don't shy away from topics about such as what does it mean for someone to die from dementia? How do you know if the end is near? And how do you plan for your future after your loved one is gone? So in a nutshell, those are the six steps to managing Alzheimer's disease and dementia. And, of course, I'd be happy to talk more about any of those steps in more depth if you would like.
Well, it's an extremely comprehensive book. You've covered everything. And for somebody who has a loved one been diagnosed, it's a really great book.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. We really wanted to arm families with the knowledge so that they can, understand what's coming and know how to manage all these different types of problems. There are some other books out there that take care of some of these issues, but there's relatively few that cover all of them in the way that this one does. I'm very proud of it, as you can tell.
Yeah, well, you really should be. Why don't we delve just a little bit into the medication side? I think that's probably the most perplexing area for most families, caregivers, et cetera. You talk about medications that can improve thinking and memory, behavior, or function, what are you talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. So there is one class of medicine that, believe it or not, has been proven to do all of those things that you mentioned, memory, behavior, and function. And that is, the class is called cholinesterase inhibitors. And these are medicines that increase the level of a chemical in the brain called acetylcholine. Now, these are medicines, they sound very mysterious with these big names I'm using, but they're things I bet your listeners have heard of. So these are medicines that include donepezil, whose brand name is Aricept, rivastigmine, whose brand name is Exelon, and galantamine. And so these medications, what they can do is they actually help improve people's memory and thinking and behavior and function a little bit. And the way that I think about them, and this has been backed up by studies, is that these medications can turn the clock back on memory loss by 6 to 12 months. So what I mean by that is when I give someone a prescription for one of these medicines, which I did in my clinic today, I can make their memory like it was at least 6 months ago, or even maybe make their memory like it was a full year ago. And the earlier that they come to see me, the more likely it is that I can turn that clock back by a full year, and that's because there's more brain cells that are still living that the medication can work on. Now, unfortunately, although I can turn the clock back, I cannot stop the clock from ticking down. So when I see this person come back, say 2 or 3 years later, yes, it's true, they're probably going to be worse than the first day that I saw them. But that does not mean the medicine is not still working. And as long as they had a good initial response, we pretty much want people to stay on these medications forever. Because if they stop them, what happens is they lose that 6 to 12 months worth of memory function that they gain. They'll lose that function in 1 to 2 weeks if they stop it. So those are always the first type of medications that I prescribe for one of my patients. Now, the second class of medication, if somebody is having difficulty with either depression or anxiety or irritability, or they're just getting really frustrated because they can't do the things that they used to and their memory keeps letting them down, I will use a medication that's in the Prozac family of medicines. And the one that I find works best is sertraline, whose brand name is Zoloft. And my second favorite is escitalopram, whose brand name is Lexapro. So these are medicines that can help with mood and irritability and anxiety. And the thing I really like about these medications is they don't make people like a zombie, and they don't impair thinking and memory. They're really very safe medications. And then lastly, sometimes we have to pull out sort of more powerful medicines if there's really a lot of trouble with behaviors after we've added these first two types of medicines. But we always do these first two types initially.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting. Because a lot of these individuals do suffer from some form of anxiety because they can't remember things, and it's pretty upsetting.
You are so right that it really is very common, and not only can the anxiety come just from the phenomenon of feeling uncomfortable because you can't remember things, but there are also the disease, the Alzheimer's disease, can actually affect parts of the brain that control our feeling calm or our feeling anxious. And so it can be both psychological factors and biological factors that can make someone end up feeling anxious.
Oh, so very difficult. Well, why don't you tell our listeners where they can purchase your book?
Absolutely. So I'm a big fan of supporting your local bookstore. So I would encourage everyone to go to the local bookstore, and if they don't have it in stock, I'm sure they can order it for you. And, of course, you can get it from your favorite online retailer like Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble, any major bookseller will have it as well. It's published by Oxford University Press, which, you know, is known both for academic books but also for books for the public.
And the title is Six Steps to Managing Alzheimer's Disease and Dementia by Dr. Andrew Butson. Thank you so very much for your time today. You explained everything beautifully, and I encourage all my listeners that need guidance in this area to get his book.
Well, thank you so much for having me on the program today.
Absolutely. Continue with your wonderful work, Dr. Butson.
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Take care. Bye-bye. That wraps up our show for today. Please join us again next week. We'll have another wonderful guest for you. And until then, please be well.
We celebrate our listeners worldwide and invite you to contact Denise at www.healthmedianow.com with any questions you may have, and follow her on Twitter at Health Media Now and Facebook at Health Media Now. For those interested in an advertising campaign on her show, contact Lisa at KnowledgeWorksPub.com. Be sure to visit GotCancerNowWhat.com for information on Denise Messenger's award-winning book, Got Cancer, Now What?